Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of Deadline's New Hollywood Podcast. My name is Dina Ray Ramos, and I'm here with
Amanda Nduka.
And we are fresh off of the Emmys.
Yes, we are. We were there yesterday.
It was last night.
Yeah, it was last night. We got to cover the carpet. What kind of you got the trend stuff, because I'm not really into the fashion, but well, you were like, saying like you saw a lot of like
with yellow. Yeah, was yellow the color was a big
thing, and it was a gold carpet.
And it was a gold carpet,
I guess, to commemorate the 70th.
Is that mean gold? That's not gold.
I don't know.
Well, I know,
but I think like, that's what
it wasn't really gold. It was like beige.
I think it was supposed to be gold, but you know. But yeah, we got covered. We talked a lot with people about like a lot of guys had a lot of things to say about the Me Too
movement.
Yeah,
and then I wrote about that on the side. Guys, check it out. but yeah, and I think the ceremony itself.
I kind of liked it. The pace was good. It was a good solid.
It was fast.
I mean, you were there too.
I thought the pace was good. Yeah, but I thought it was kind of a little dull.
I mean, granted, like it came out today. This was like the lowest
or something. Yeah.
But you know, I was talking to someone. There's like, oh, no one really watches award shows anymore, unless you're in the industry.
But nobody watches TV in general
and
anymore.
That's,
so and then people need to take that into account when they're doing lowest.
And also, I think people are looking for meme-worthy YouTube clips, Instagram clip moments, and I think they delivered a lot of those.
Oh, yeah. The proposal. That was definitely like a
The proposal.
Like, did you see Leslie Jones?
Yeah.
She stopped. Like, it was like her proposal.
She was like shocked. Like, she was getting married.
She had the best face ever whenever that happened.
And then, like, Colin Jost and Michael Che hosted.
I liked them.
They kept the show going.
I thought so.
We were backstage, and from what I saw, like on the screen, they played really good cruise directors, and I think one of the main jokes, they touched on diversity a lot.
Yeah, they had to.
And I think you really liked the Michael Che.
Yeah, God, I like the whole like my mom doesn't like the award shows full of white people because they never thank God. and then like
he Amy Sherman Palladino won twice,
and then he's like, this white lady won twice, and she still didn't thank God. And then he was like, somebody thanked a horse.
That was Jeff Daniels.
Yeah,
I mean, and like
that was funny to me.
There was that, and they had like the diversity intro.
Oh, the intro,
and then the reparation Emmy.
Oh, that was funny,
which was really funny. But you know, we were just talking about this, about how you know, yes, there was a lot of people of color nominated, but most of them won last week at the Creative Arts Emmys. Whereas, I don't want to call this the main event,
it's a primetime Emmys.
There wasn't really any, there were tons of people of color who were nominated, but barely any winners. Like, the only ones who won, Darren Criss, friend of the podcast
who
and
is
former
half,
guest.
Yeah, he's half Filipino. Even
though, RuPaul's Drag Race won, also a friend of the podcast and former
guest.
And
he won for host, too.
Yeah, so. And I think that's the first time a reality competition show and the host won the same year.
Okay.
I think, I'm pretty sure. And then Thandie Newton won for
Westworld. Yeah.
She was shocked.
Yeah, she definitely was.
Regina King, Brenda Jenkins, a.k.a. Brenda Jenkins from 227.
Yes.
She won.
227.
This is her third?
This is her third time. She's been nominated for four years in a row.
Yeah.
This is the first time she's won in the lead category.
It is for 7 seconds.
Yeah, for 7 seconds.
And then Ryan Murphy won, representing LGBTQ community, for Assassination of Johnny Versace.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean,
it wasn't too bad. Do you think?
I think you really have to like consider, because Tiffany Haddish was backstage.
She won last week.
She won last week, and she came backstage, and somebody did ask her like, "What do you think about that there isn't a lot of winners that are happening right now in the actual
liked
Emmys?"
Her answer. Yeah.
Yeah, her answer was basically, well, it was kind of twofold.
Yeah.
One, it was that's not my job. Mm-hmm. I can't really respond to that. But two, also, I won. I'm holding an
exactly.
Emmy right now.
Exactly.
Like, you know,
I know. Like,
why are you asking me
exactly
this question?
Why are you like downing my moment right now? Like,
and it's
I
like
won.
So, I think it's so cool that I was surprised she came backstage. She wasn't at the Creative Arts Emmys to do her acceptance speech.
Wasn't, yeah.
So she took the opportunity to come backstage and talk to us. And it was really funny. She was all, y'all are not even paying attention.
I know. She's like, if this was a comedy show, I would have liked.
Because we were all talking. But she was all, I get that y'all are doing your job. So y'all,
it is
kind of, okay.
You know, it is kind of, I guess it's kind of rude that when somebody's back there, we're all
and
just
we're,
typing up. But
yeah, but
that's what we got to do.
But like, speaking of Emmy nominees, I mean, Insecure, East Issa Rae got nominated, and her co-star, Yvonne.
Oh, yeah, that's who we have on the podcast this week, is Yvonne Orji, who plays Molly. What you said you relate to Molly really a lot.
Loving her story arc this season.
Yeah, right. I've loved her character from the onset. I love her, Issa. Like, I always say, like, her and Issa's relationship on the show, like, is me and my friends in real life. Like, the way they talk,
and the way they argue.
Everything from the way they talk, where they argue, what they do when they hang out, everything is like, so I love that show since its beginning, because I'm like, this is me. This is me, my best friend. Like, this is how we talk. This is what we do. This is what we talk about. We talk about guys all the time. Yeah. This is what we do. Like, it's just like, I don't know. The show is just so easy to relate to.
Yeah.
And it just got renewed for a fourth season on HBO, which obviously means it's being doing well received. Yeah.
And then Yvonne just talked about, like, kind of how her own morals play into, you know, how she separates Molly from Yvonne.
And I think one thing I was really happy to have her, one reason why I was really happy to have her on the podcast was because we're both first generation Nigerians in America. And a lot of times, like, you think of Hollywood as something as very sinful, that if you have morals, you can't be a part of this city. But, like, I feel like Yvonne is a great example of somebody who is very outspoken about her spirituality, and she can still succeed
in the industry.
And to me, she's a testament. I mean, she's a testimony in her own self, like, what she's doing, and I think she's a testimony for young girls, young Nigerians that want to be in this business. Like, you don't have to give up your morals.
Yeah.
You could still be a Christian. You could still be spiritual, whatever you want to believe in, and still do this job, and still be great at it. And on top of that, have a platform to speak about your spirituality and to share, you know, your experience or to share whatever you want to share. But I think she's been a great speaker, and I appreciate what she's doing.
Yeah.
So next year when she wins the Emmy, she'll be thanking God.
And us.
She will definitely thank God. So without further ado, here is Yvonne. Well, thank you, Yvonne, for being part of this new Hollywood podcast.
Yes.
I'm actually really excited to have you here, because you're part of this group of Nigerians. Obviously, I'm a little bit biased. I'm rooting for my people.
Sorry to everyone else.
It's fine.
There's a Nigerian coalition.
Yes, and we're having a huge moment right now in the mainstream. You're seeing there's a lot. Our music is popping. Like, you know, our clothing is popping. There's a lot.
It's always been popping. I feel like other people are discovering it, and now they're like,
exactly.
It's like, no, we've been great.
Exactly. Yeah.
We've been amazing.
But, like, for you, what is it like being, like, a figure of this moment right now?
I think it's just so dope because, like, I mean, Nigerians are very loud. We're just like it's just our thing. Like, we're loud. Like, even when we're failing, we're like, we never fail. Like, it's just like, we're like loud about, like, not even doing well. It's just like, wait, what? And so it's just so dope to come in. And, you know, I remember when I was watching, like, The Rise of Uzo Aduba. Like, oh, my God, like, she did it. She can make it. And I'll never forget it. My parents had no idea, like, what I was trying to do. And then Lupita won the Oscar. I remember getting a text from my mom, like, your friend has won the Oscar. I'm like, I don't actually know Lupita. Like, don't know. But I like that you think we're all in commune together. And it made so much more sense for her. Like, this thing that my daughter wants to do. Like,
Like, Nigerians in entertainment. That's the thing.
And also, like, Lupita is from Kenya. I don't want anyone to think we're trying to claim
her.
African. But, you know, it's one continent.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, that was a very real moment that my mom was just like, oh, continue. Okay. Maybe one day we will celebrate whatever it is that you're trying to do.
Yeah.
And I think now you have more first generation Nigerian Americans looking at, like, now it's not just Uzo, it's like me, it's Cynthia Erivo, it's Lovie, it's Bose, it's all of these players from all different countries in Africa that are, like, being loud about being here and being present and having their voice heard in such a very major and beautiful way.
Yeah. It's so funny, like, especially with immigrant parents, and, like, when we go into, like, a lot. I was just talking to one of my friends who's from, her parents are from Iran and from Mexico, and how they were like, oh, they called her and they're like, "Oh, did you see this fight between Cardi B and Nicki Minaj? What do you know about it?" Like they automatically think if we live in LA, we know everything about. Like my sister texted me. This has nothing to do with like any. She was just like, "Oh, I heard Brad and Jennifer are back together. What do you know?" And I'm like,
I don't know. This is the first time I'm actually hearing this conversation. I was working. Yeah, right. What do you think I do for work?
That is none of my business.
That was like, "Oh, and plus we don't cover that kind of stuff." Yes. No, but it's like, yeah, but you grew up in an immigrant with immigrant parents, mm-hmm. like Amanda and I both did as well. And of course, there's this like kind of narrative with immigrant parents where it's like, oh, you're going to be
a doctor,
lawyer, engineer. The Trinity.
The four-fecta. Yeah.
I think it's with especially because like they just, of course, they want the best for us and mm-hmm. we understand that. But, you know, but they still, but when you say you're going to be an actor or a comedian, and they, I don't know if they, you know, maybe not so supportive of it because they were kind of veering you in one direction.
They cried.
Yeah.
I was like, we can say it. They cried.
Yeah. But that being said, who were some of the people that inspired you and kind of kept you motivated to be all, I'm going to see this through?
You know, I think it was a lot. Well, one, I didn't just like wake up one day and be like, I don't want to be a comedian. Like, it was very much like, I heard God tell me do comedy, and I was like, nah, bruh, I don't think that's gonna work, because that's also how I talk to Jesus. And you know, because I knew that the driving force into the entertainment industry wasn't like a wishful thought or like just like a, you know, I'm free, let's figure this other thing out. It was like, no, like I have real debt. Like I have like, oh, Sally Mae, a lot of money. Like, what are we doing? Mm-hmm. And also, I have like a two-parent household who loves me. Like, why am I purposely like going broke?
When
I could be eating three square meals a day. Exactly. And so that's why I know, like, okay, one, the faith aspect of it really was the thing that was like, well, you know what? Either I'm lying or Jesus is. And I think he has a better track record. So I'm just going to like keep going in that vein. But at the same time, it's also like the nationalistic, the country pride in me too was just like, man, if I fail, it's not just Yvonne Orji failing. It is every Nigerian girl who like didn't want to go be a doctor that like I could be failing because, and it's also like everybody in my village who was just like, well, we sent her to America and then she has nothing to show for herself. Oh my God. You know, it's now I'm failing like a whole entire country and like a whole village. So for me, it was just like, the pressure was on. So it wasn't even like, oh, I look to so-and-so to like maybe one day. It's just like, I just don't want to fail. Just like, I'd rather not fail. Mm-hmm. And that was the constant motivator of keep going. Like, you know what? It was hard for Joseph too, but he was second in command at the end of it all. He was he got put in jail and he got lied on by Potiphar's wife. These are all biblical examples. Girls, in case I'm like losing everyone.
It's like a Bible study today.
But it was just like it had some bumps for Joseph. He made it, or you know, like I'm sure, like you know, Jesus, the Holy Spirit appearing to like Mary, like, you're gonna have a baby. She's like, wait, what? We're not even married yet. Yeah. Like, this, I just got engaged. Like, don't you mess this up for me. Like, they stone women out of, you know, wedlock. But it was just like, well, if it works, then it works. Oh, and I just kind of had that, like, if it works, wow. You know, like, then it works. As opposed to, like, regret and never knowing if it would work because I never tried.
Exactly. Yeah.
So for me, it was either, like, fear of failure. And I was like, the fear of failure was more poignant than just failure or than just fear. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, no. We gonna keep going.
Mm-hmm. That's a good story. Yeah. It's like, so you were your own inspiration, you could say.
Yeah, I mean,
You just kind of were self-motivated.
It was self-motivated because also there was no one like I could like turn to like immediacy in like Nigerian culture. They did it, exactly. So I'm going to do like that because it's very different. Like, yes, I could see like other Americans thriving and be like, maybe one day I'll have that story. But even when I found that Issa was half Senegalese, I was like, oh, that's it's even more powerful. It's like I love it and I could be like, Mom, she's Senegalese too. Like, you know, like another African that's doing it because like that adds just like another layer of like the pressure. And so, there were so many people that I looked at and was like, man, if I could have a career like Angela Bassett or, you know, or there's so many people that were like so dope and were creating phenomenal content. I mean, growing up in the 90s, I watched everything TGI Friday, you know, like all of those 90s sitcoms, the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, even Carl Winslow. And, you know, I was just like, listen, like these shows were freaking awesome. And then like they just kind of went away. So there was like a whole like generation of folks who were just like, do black voices exist on television? But like, I'm like, I know they do because I was there. Like I watched them. I remember even like in the dramas, New York on the Cover. And you would wait every week to be like, who's the musical guest? You know, because you know, like Mary Jane Blige would perform. Yes, and you were just like people would like literally go there and like launch their new single. And it was like, did you watch New York on the Cover? And it's like, those were the things that like black voices were doing. And then, and now there's like this resurgence, and so now it's like a really great time. But you also have a lot of creatives who are like, how do we make sure that doesn't happen again? How do we make sure that, you know, we are here to stay and it's not just like a fad, like
it's
diversity?
It's not a moment. It's not a trend.
Like diversity is not a trend. Like black people can't not be black anymore.
And I think that, and we're seeing that like beyond, like even like with the Crazy Rich Asians phase, like they're like, oh my god, Asians watch movies, that kind of
But it's just also like when people are surprised is it like the buying power of like people non-white nuns? Like, you know, like I say it all the time, like Nike made a killing off the Nigerian jerseys for the World Cup. Like they went in like what 30 minutes and then they went they made like millions of dollars. And like, do you understand? Like Nigerians love other things. Nigerians, like, we will finance anything. It's like, it's like, oh, Ferragamo made like a green, white, green version of
they'll buy it.
That's our, it's like, and it costs $5 million. Well, we'll, you know what? You'll start seeing all the millionaire Nigerians
rocking the Ferragamo. That's true.
It's a, and it's like all about just being seen. I think that's like, oh, they noticed us.
They noticed us. And I think the more Hollywood like notices people, because it's just like Crazy Rich Asians, I'm sure like it's just like, bruh, they've been here like, why is this the first like
in 25 years or something?
Like what, like even like with the whole Jeremy Lin thing, like when like Lin Sanity was going
on. I remember
that. And it was just like, yeah, it is a moment, because like Yao Ming was probably like the last like notable like Asian basketball player, and it's like Jeremy Lin is like dope, and it's just like, yeah, but like, guys, it's not a fact. It's not a what if the NBA like maybe invested more in like Asians? Like, I don't know if the Asian community is like big on basketball. I have no idea.
I know Filipinos are.
So then it's like, well, then let's like target that group. You know, but it's just kind of like, it doesn't have to be like such a like, what? Moment every time something dope happens. Even like Black Panther was like, they made money in China. It's like, it was also a good movie.
What? No, like the goal, obviously the ultimate goal is that this all this stuff would not, it would just be a thing. Like, it wouldn't be like, oh, this is the first
the
black
first
or
X,
the first female or the first whatever. It's like, let's just have these things just be like a normal everyday, like, oh, this is dope. I can say shit. Is dope shit right here.
And also, even if it fails, that's okay.
No, I think that's like, that's the thing, is that we have to, like, people of color, marginalized communities have to have the opportunity to fail, like, white communities.
And that was actually what I was fighting for, more than like being a comedian or being an actress. It was like, can I have the opportunity to dream something else? Because that's essentially what it is. Like, like, it's hard to be a doctor. It's hard to be a lawyer. It's hard to be an engineer. And so we're not like putting those things down, but it's like, you come to America with the opportunity to like land of the free, home of the brave, explore. Like, someone sat down and was like, what if we have a social network for people to like communicate with people that they've never met, i.e. Facebook. And now you see like people getting married off Facebook. Now you see people like meeting their long lost relatives. Like, I'm sure Mark Zuckerberg did not see that when he sat down to like code, and whatever you feel about like how the inception of that was. Whoever sat down to code, you know, like that was not like what they saw. They just saw like, this could be fun.
Yeah.
And it's like, so immigrant groups like need that opportunity to be like, this could be fun.
Exactly.
Or
yeah.
this could actually not work. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And then I could also go back to my master's program. Because, like, my master's degree does not expire.
Yeah, you know,
like,
yeah.
It's like, exactly. I've earned the master's. I can always work in public health. Like, sure, I'll take, like, a class to re-up on, like, whatever knowledge has happened in, like, the 5 years I've been out of it. But, like, what if this other thing works?
Exactly. Yeah.
Or what if this other thing fails? At least I tried.
Yeah. Because, like, I guarantee you, I mean, God forbid, if Black Panther or Crazy Rich Asians did not make as much money as they did, they'd be all, we're not doing that kind of stuff anymore. Whereas if it was something like a, you know, I don't know, like an Anna Kendrick fronted film that failed, they'll be all, oh, well, let's just try again. No shade to Anna Kendrick.
Yeah, they're also like very mediocre films that win awards.
Oh my God.
They're so mediocre. And people are like, but did you see it? And because it's like everyone, like, it's kind of like if everyone in production didn't drink LaCroix, would LaCroix still be like a thing?
Yeah.
Like, but it's like, it's almost like, if you don't drink LaCroix on set, like, what kind of water do you like? Who are you? Have you tried the new pomegranate one? Like, do I even like this kind of water?
Exactly. Like, what? Can I say that I don't like this
water? Oh my God, I don't like LaCroix, guys.
Okay, I hope there's no LaCroix sponsorship.
No, no, there isn't.
Like, I'm not saying I don't like LaCroix. I'm just saying that
it's hard to, like, go do something like
that. I do like the LaCroix reference, though. I'm like, I know. I don't like bubbly drinks in general. That's why.
But it's just like, it's like there's so many, like, films and things that people put out there, and you're just like,
why is this out there?
People are like falling over themselves for, like, okay, that's cool. Like, here's the thing, the beauty of life is that you have choices.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, if this, i.e., I think mediocre thing can mm-hmm. exist, then, like, this other mediocre thing can exist. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about that in the same way we talk about this thing? Mm-hmm. Or, like, can that win awards in the same way this is winning awards? And if not, if the answer is no, why?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Speaking of choices, I want to talk about your spirituality, because you've been very outspoken about it since the beginning. Early on, did you feel the need to hide it? Or was there ever, like, any kind of pressure to not be as vocal? Like, maybe you're scared that people here would not receive it as well? Or was this just something that you never...
I couldn't hide it, because mm-hmm. I think God made it very impossible for me to talk about my inception into Hollywood without mentoring Holy Spirit told me to do comedy. Because mm-hmm. it's like, it wasn't my idea. Like, mm-hmm. I wasn't like, you know what I'm going to do today? Do a hot 5 set. Like, no, like, I'm not that, like, witty. Or like, I didn't even know. Like, it's scared. Comedy still scares the crap out of me. It scared the crap out of me when he told me to do it in 2006. So it's like, there's no way for me to talk about, like, why you guys are even sitting here mm-hmm. talking to me.
But were you ever, like, scared to be like, oh, people are going to receive me as, like, a crazy person or something? Or
that's
like,
for them.
Yeah.
Like, no. That's, like, it's not, like, I can only speak my truth. Like, because mm-hmm. if you tell me, like, oh, I wanted to paint this wall blood orange because it reminded me of that time that, like, I squirted water balloons and it was filled with paint. And it was like, okay, well, that's great. That's your inception story. Like, mm-hmm. I can't be like, that was a dumb way to paint this room. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, it's for me, it's like, it's my authentic journey. Now, I'm not saying, like, hey, everybody in this room, we're going to lay hands on you and everyone's going to get saved. Like, that's not, like, I've never been the one to do that. I'm just saying, like, hey, this is, like, what works for me. My faith is a driving force for me. And it's like, if you like anything about me, just know that a part of what you like is also, like, my faith.
Yeah.
Because that is the foundation for which, you know, a lot of things in my life are based on. So I think, I just think that people have come to, like, appreciate it, because it is my authentic story. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not, like, I don't have to... It's also not something I can hang up. Like, mm-hmm. it's not like I'm like, whew, thought I'd been a Christian today. Let me tell you, girl. You know, it's just like, it's part of who I am. So it's like, it's almost like saying, like, can you not tell people you're Nigerian? It's
yeah.
Like, that's okay. Impossible.
Yeah. That's true. Impossible. Yeah. I mean, I know, like, a lot of people that I've met here, it's like they're Christians, but it's like you want to be, like, the Christian, but not the, like, you kind of want to hide it, because a lot of people here, you don't know, like, what their beliefs are. You don't know if, like, they're going to perceive you as, oh, so, you know, so-and-so told me to do this in my head. It's like that can, like, be construed as, oh, this person might be, like, a crazy person.
And
so,
also, like, Christians have given other Christians a bad name.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like,
exactly.
Christianity, like, in general has been, like, well, all religion, really, like, has been just drugged through the mud mm-hmm. with good reason. And so it's just, like, it's not, like, far off to be like,
yeah, like you don't want to be,
And so that's why, like, for me, I work hard to be authentic because it's like, you know what? The same way that you've probably encountered a Christian that is crazy or that is just like
the ones that are in their sheet with the you're going to hell if you're, you know,
or I just don't even think like actually believes and it's just like using Christianity as like a front but really they, like they're like cursing at your mama like in front of you and behind your back. It's like, well, from like the same way you've run into those Christians, it's like, hey, maybe running into me will let you know, like, oh, there's an, there's another spectrum. Yeah. It's the same way you run into, like, a horrible Hollywood executive, and you're like, oh, my God, everyone in Hollywood is trash. Mm-hmm. But then you run into, like, the very nice Hollywood executive who like, said hello to you.
And wants
like,
to actually help you.
And remembered your birthday. So it's like, if you meet one person, you can't be like, ah, everyone in Hollywood is a crazy crackhead. Mm-hmm. It's like, no. It's like, no, they're, I've met phenomenally nice people in Hollywood and who've helped me in my career. So it's just like, yeah, there are a couple of bad apples, but, like, that doesn't spoil the bunch. Like,
full of knowledge.
Yeah, I know you are. So let's talk about Insecure because you play Molly. Obviously.
Oh, oh my! Yeah. I feel judgment.
No.
That was like a deep sigh.
The way you said it,
Molly.
Was
like, I felt judgment from you.
I was like, that was more of like, oh, Molly, I relate to you, girl.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. It was like, oh, that Molly.
There we go. Yeah, okay. But no, your character, you know. It's okay, I can take it.
Yeah. No, I like Molly a lot.
No, we love Molly. But, like, you know, your character's very, like, you know, sexually liberated. She curses. These are these things that we've spoken about, like, things that you don't necessarily do in your real life. How do you manage playing a character that you differ from morally?
I mean, I imagine that Denzel Washington has never been a drug dealer.
Yeah.
And a crooked cop. Yeah. So... yeah, I think in the same way that we're not like, Denzel, how were you able to infiltrate the drug market and become a kingpin? Like, you would never ask him that question.
Yeah.
And so, much in the same way, it's like, you know, there are things that, as an actress, like, I won't do. Mm-hmm. And there are things that you're like, okay, how do I meet this vision for whatever this character calls for and still protect my brand? And it's just like, now let's walk that balance and find that, like, fine line. But at the same token, it's like, Chris Rock played a crackhead. Like, I've been on tour with Chris Rock. He's not a crackhead. You know, and so it's just like, you have to become some of these characters, or you have to do things that, like, there's no kind of foray into it from your personal standpoint. And so you just have to figure it out. But at the same time, it's like you protect your moral high ground however you can.
I think that's really important to talk about because, especially being Nigerian, a lot of our families are super, you know, we're deep into our Christianity. Yeah. And so you see like Hollywood, and Hollywood is Sodom and Gomorrah.
No,
am I
getting
trash.
Yeah. Sodom and Gomorrah. Yeah. She was like, when was the last time I opened my Bible?
Let me act like I know the Bible. Anyway, so you see like, you know, people, that's the perception of that, you know, our people have. But it's not necessarily... There's no rule about it, right? Like, it doesn't. There's nothing that says that you can be in Hollywood and still not be a believer.
Yeah.
So I think that's really important to talk about.
And it's like, I plan on being in Hollywood and never being naked.
Exactly.
And it's like, I haven't yet. And Molly is sexually liberated. And it's just like, oh, I haven't seen Yvonne's areola. And you won't.
Exactly.
Hashtag no Molly areola.
No areola show.
Yeah, it's really important because, like I said, a lot of maybe that's another reason why parents are very hesitant about their kids getting into this business because they think that all this, you have to do all these things, and that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah. And you also have to live with the idea that, like, there are some roles you will not be able to do because some directors really want this. And as long as you're fine with that, like, for me, it's like, at the point to which you want full nudity, you don't want me. And that's okay, because then there will be another movie that, like...
that you can do
that
what
I
you
can
want,
do.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or, like, I'll just write a movie and then I can put myself in it. And then
there you go.
You know, like, whatever. Like, the thing about it is, like, you can't, like, setting certain morals or setting certain, like... I don't want to call it limitations, but just barometers or boundaries. Boundaries about your career, about what you will do. It's like, okay, but like also no. It's kind of like if you're like, well, I don't want to date a guy that X, Y, and Z, and then you can't be mad that you don't have a date on Friday night.
Like
because you're like, I don't want to date this, and if this is what's presenting itself for me to go out on Friday night, either like I don't believe what I say, or like I'm just settling.
Exactly.
And so I think you just have to understand what the reality of what comes with whatever boundaries you set. Mm, yeah. And the reality is, like, I'm sure, like, there's some directors like, oh my God, I really want to work with you and you'd be great. But like, the way I envision this role and this character, it's this. And it's like, well, let me know when you have another project for me, because I also want to work with you too. That's okay. Mm-hmm. And you know what? That's life. Yeah, life is about choices, and life is about sometimes you don't get the breaks, but like maybe there's another break for you. It's okay.
So like, Molly in the most recent season, she's moved to a new job, and it's a black firm. And to me, like, it seems like she's a little bit more uncomfortable there than she was before, and I kind of relate to that. Like, I kind of like this journey she's going on right now, especially like, you know, trying to interact with your people or who you think your people, but it doesn't necessarily always.
At the white firm, Molly was a magical Negro. And it was just like her blackness was her superpower. Like, she was also a good lawyer, but it was just also this like thing that made you more special. Like, I don't know if she was the diversity hire, but it was just like, Molly, like, anything you do is now like with the shine of like, and the black girl did it. That is awesome. Meanwhile, she goes to this new firm and it's like, well, everybody has the same superpower, honey. So it's just like, your blackness isn't what's special anymore. It's like your work. And like how you work well with others, like that's actually what's going to like get you ahead. And so it's kind of like she didn't understand that, like, by virtue of life and how things have transpired in this country, like an all black firm will have certain disadvantages than like a company that you just came from that like had all these perks. And so it's kind of like, you go to an all black firm, but understand like they might have some limitations. Like the clients that were comfortable going to the all white firm maybe aren't comfortable going to the all black firm, even though like all of you can do the same work and you make it even do it better. But it's just like, so like the resources, the like financial backing that the firm you just came from might not exist at this firm. So she hasn't quite like gotten her mind to like wrap around that reality of where she finds herself. And so she's still operating in like this world of prestige, or not even prestige, that's not the word I'm looking for, like privilege. In a way that exists that this company doesn't. And also it's like, also Molly, like they gave you your rate, they gave you like everything you asked for and like and negotiated for, so it's like that's good. So now everything else, like, just work around that, you know, figure that out. But she's so stuck in her head and is not trying to, you know, she wants everything how she wants it when she wants it on her terms, and she doesn't realize it, like sometimes life doesn't work like that. And that's like a lot of millennials, like millennials. I was like, let me say that word.
Instant gratification. Is like the name of the game.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, we were just having this conversation with someone, and I was like, you know, I am so happy that I had to work hard for everything, and now like I can reap the benefits. Like, I have like a family member who was just like, yeah, I want to major in theater, and I was like, and your mom just let you? Like,
I know, right?
Like, you don't know the struggle of having to get two other degrees that you're not going to use before
you can get the theater degree.
Like, you just said yes, and they signed off, and like they're going to pay your student loans. Like, you know what? You're not going to make it. Like, I'm like, maybe you are, but yeah, it's just the struggle to like be resourceful, and the struggle to think outside the box, and the struggle like that creates innovation. Exactly. Like that creates like a way of thinking that someone else who just like showed up doesn't have. And like, for me, I'm like, that is a thing that like, I'm not trying to say every millennial doesn't have that, but in such a, we've created such a world now where things are so like easy. Like, my biggest thing that I hate when people like want to meet with me is to ask me something that's Googleable. I'm like, if you can find it on Google, please don't ask me. Like, because it's like, that means you didn't do any research. That means you didn't even do like a quick like, oh, okay. Like, it already exists. But it's just like, some people like that 30 seconds to Google something. Mm-hmm. They don't want to do that.
No.
And that's such a, I'm like, I grew up with Encyclopedia Britannica. Oh, yeah, right? You and get, I'm not that old, y'all. So it was just like
the volume 1, 2, 3.
Oh, and you had to wait for like for K to come out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, and you couldn't check them out at the library.
You could not.
You had to photocopy.
Listen. And I still remember floppy disks. Yeah. Like,
oh, and microfiche. I don't know.
Yeah, all of the above. And I'm not trying to say like, let's go back to the Stone Age. Because right. Obviously like technology has helped with advancement. But it's like, what else has technology helped in like doing? Mm-hmm. Because I think it's helped in making people like lazy, like mm-hmm. or like I was like, can I say that? But like,
no, yeah,
I think
they
it's helped in making people like not think like anymore, like how like we had to like, how are we going to do this?
Yeah. Woo!
No, yeah. Yeah. It is instant gratification.
I do think about, I'm like, I'm so bad with directions. I don't know how I'd be able to drive without like a GPS, because when I started driving it was but it's like, I just think about this. Like, I wouldn't be able to do that without.
But also,
like,
remember Yahoo Maps?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Before the GPS, exactly. Yahoo Maps, so like, you had to
print it out
before you left the house. And like, if you made a wrong turn, it's like, well, you know,
you gotta figure it out. But I'm you're right. It's
from
like,
getting lost.
Yeah, but like, exactly. You figure it out. And that's like the, that's what you were talking about. Like, you become really like innovative and smart and how to like navigate your world. It changes. Yeah.
Because you find a street that you're like, I didn't know that street was there.
Exactly.
But yeah. I mean, I remember calling places and being all, how do you get there?
Yeah.
And then they would stay on the phone and say, you turn left here, and mm-hmm. I have to actually physically write. I don't handwrite anything that much.
Yeah. I still write cards. Like, I still handwrite cards. I'm probably the only one that, like, buys, like, stamps from
folks. I do, because I have to pay bills.
Yes, but. There's that. But I also, like, those commission checks need to be sent.
Yeah.
But I also like getting, like, mail.
Yeah.
And so it's like, if I like getting mail, let me send mail so that people know that I like getting mail too. But even if I don't get them back, it's just like, it's just a thing of buying cards.
Yeah.
And like, I go to like Marshall's and Ross and buy like the big cards and like write them out. Just thinking of you. Some of them are like really like,
oh, I want to start doing that.
They're only like $3. And then like,
it takes them. Doesn't take that much time.
And then they'll call me and they'll be all, why the hell did you send me this?
No, I like, this is the worst. I definitely sent like a letter and like thinking like, oh, they're going to get it. They did not check their mail. And I was so mad. I was like, bruh, check your mail. It was like I sent it ahead of like going to visit this person. Yeah. So in my mind, I'm like, I visited them, spent time with them, left them before they even got the letter that was there like 2 weeks before I got there. So I was like, you know what? This is the one time it backfired on me, but I'm like, check your mail. Check your mail from that one. But it was like, but it was still, because I had to like, convince my mind, like, all right, whenever they get it, it'll be a surprise.
Yeah, yeah.
And so finally I got, like, the picture, like, you sent me this? I was like, look at the date. Look at the date. It was almost a month ago. But, yes, I did send you this.
Yeah, so, like, you know, switching gears a little bit from handwriting cards. So in the New York Times recently, Viola Davis had an interview about how she talked about regretting doing, like, she had some regrets about The Help. I don't know if you read this, about how, you know, the characters in there weren't seen, the black characters mainly, and how it was another white savior movie. She didn't say white savior. She just kind of, you know, alluded to that. But, like, have you ever been, like, what is your kind of stance or your opinion on these kind of movies that have black characters, but they are saved kind of in a way by, you know, you know, in the case of The Help, Emma Thompson's character.
Emma Stone.
This is Deadline. Thank you. or like even in The Blind Side, you know, because she did get a lot of flack, honestly. Some people were like, oh, you should just be grateful you got a job or whatever. You got an Oscar nomination for this. But she didn't say that. She wasn't putting down the director or that. She was just like, oh, I just wish that they would have focused more on mm-hmm. the black characters.
You know, I think this whole notion of like you should be just grateful mm-hmm. is like, what does that even mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, put Viola Davis in a room toe-to-toe with any other actress. Mm-hmm. Like, grateful. Like, she didn't just get here because she got off a bus and was like, I got a dream.
I got a dream with $15 in my pocket.
What are we talking about? Like, so the notion of, like, the fact that you still have people that have that mentality, I think, is the larger problem.
Mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
if those people who have those mentalities are the ones greenlighting shows or the ones directing shows or writing shows, then that feeds the larger problem. Mm-hmm. So I think more than just like, oh, is there a savior character? Like, that's not the question, or that's not the answer we should be looking for. It's how do we now inspire and motivate storytellers that can see outside the box, mm-hmm. or they can't even show people that, hey, this is why this character might be flawed or problematic. Mm-hmm. Is there a way that we can peel back the layer on this character, mm-hmm. and not be met with like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
Because at the point to like, I would never tell a Jewish person how to be Jewish.
Exactly.
I would like, never be like, so Rosh Hashanah, I don't know. Like I would never, Shabbat Shalom, everybody. Like I would never. Right. So like at the point to which you're like, I'm a writer. Like I know the Black experience, yeah. and you're not Black. And you're like, I don't understand.
Yeah.
And so, but you do have a lot of people who are like, I've been in this industry. I know, like, this is the Black experience. And you're like, from what? I'm Black and I don't know the Black experience because I'm like Nigerian American.
Yeah. Yeah.
I find out new things about the Black experience from Blackish. And I'm like, right? It's Juneteenth. You know, like, yeah, I'm sorry. I watch other shows. I'm like, what is this Juneteenth they keep talking about? Mm-hmm. Let me do my research. Or like, Atlanta or like other shows show like Black characters.
Different experiences.
Even Insecure. I learned stuff about being a Black woman in Inglewood or in Anywood from Insecure. And I'm playing a Black girl. I'm like, so wait, what are we doing? You know, and it's just like, it would be dumb of me to be like, hey guys, I'm Black. Listen to me. Exactly. It's just like, no. Like I'm nine. Even being Nigerian, I can tell you about what it is to be a Nigerian Igbo woman because there's like a several different tribes in the country. So it's like just because you have one voice doesn't mean that like you know it all. Mm-hmm. And then if you're not even of that like community, how dare you say, trust me, I got it. I don't trust you. And so I think the conversation should be opened up to be like, how do we allow the voices? Like even on our show, like I'm so proud of our writer's room because we have everything from a gay Black guy to a straight white guy who's married with a kid, you know, like writing for two Black girls. Mm-hmm. It's just like,
that's so
diversity.
Good.
Yeah. That's exactly. Like, 'cause everyone's point of view matters. Everyone's like worldview of like, okay, so if this happened to you, has this happened to anybody else?
Exactly.
Okay, how do we now put it in the framework of these characters and then make it authentic in their world?
Yeah.
And because it's like, there's so many experiences. Like every white experience isn't a monolith. So why do you think every Black experience would be a monolith?
Yeah.
Like we just had an episode. I'm like, I've never done Molly, but Molly was on Molly. And I'm like shooting the whole episode. I'm like, okay, so what does drunk look like? How should I act? You know, like what sensation or emotion am I supposed to be feeling right now? Yeah. Also like, who's done drugs in the show? You know, but it's just like, that's an experience like I'm tapping into, like I have no, and like, and when she's like, I don't wanna be high no more, I'm like, I wouldn't wanna be high anymore either.
Yeah.
This was very messy.
Yeah.
You know, and so I just think that it's just important for new voices to be allowed to come up, so then you don't have to have marginalized characters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think people look at, you know, Issa and Molly and say like, wow, you know, what's really great about them is that, like, they're fully formed characters. It's like, yeah. So what were a lot of the characters on We Got Y'all? You know, so we're, like, a lot of the, like, you know, like, the friends.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We're finding out more about them. It's like, because why do you want to do a show where someone's just, like, the butt of the joke?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or, like, the comic relief. Or just, like, like, I don't know what
they
sounds
say,
like.
But like, they have about one line, and then they're out.
And then that's it. It's like, can we get more meat out of them? Like, can we get a backstory, an arc?
Yeah.
Like, what makes them different than the characters on
Girlfriend or something.
Or any other show.
Any
like,
other show, yeah.
You know, like, you have Young Sheldon. Like, why is Young Sheldon? Like, I don't know how many whiz kids there are in the world,
yeah,
but, like,
yeah.
people love Young Sheldon because
yeah,
people
yeah.
love
they
the
sure
Big
do.
Bang.
They
yeah.
sure
do. And the Big Bang Theory. It's like, I don't know any, like, Einsteins, but,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
somebody... regular Joe Schmoes are like, Big Bang Theory is so fun. I'm like, do you even know what 2 times 64 is? Like, without getting the calculator?
I don't
exactly.
But like, wait, 128.
Joe Schmoes in your head.
He had to, like, carry the one and, like, divide the four. But I saw him counting on his toes.
I was, like, looking up at the ceiling.
He's, like, counting with his fingers on his chin. But you know what I mean? Like, but that show attracts somebody.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It's always funny when people are like, I get text messages like, my coworker likes your show, and she's white.
They like, whisper it.
Yeah.
It's like a best kept secret. And I'm like, well, yeah, because it's funny.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and what's so crazy is I think a lot of people see the ads, and they see, like, two brown skin girls, and I'm like, and they decide, I don't know if the show is for me, mm-hmm. which is just like, Black people haven't had that luxury to do that
yeah,
with.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, if you're a writer and you're like, you haven't watched Game of Thrones, and you enter a writer's room and everyone's talking about Game of Thrones, you're like, oh, I don't watch that.
Then they get on you.
Then it's just like, ah. So now you're like, ah, I gotta watch. And like, who's the audience for Game of Thrones? Like, has anyone been to the wall? Has anyone seen a White Walker?
Right.
What wall are we talking about? You know, it's just, it's like science fiction, but it's just like, you don't say like, let me like, take my mind out of this realm that I'm not familiar with and put one on so I can enjoy the show. It's like, you know, if you see a show about two black girls, it's like, maybe there's something funny,
exactly.
you know, about this show that's just funny.
Yeah.
And so I love it when white people watch a show with non-black people because it's not a just for this group of people. Mm-hmm. If entertainment is supposed to move you, it's supposed to inspire you, it's supposed to like introduce you to like a world that you maybe don't. If our show does all of those things, then just appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's a good show.
Yeah, so. And I learn a lot about L.A., too.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know any of these
I want to go to that taco place.
What's funny is, Worldwide Tacos, what's funny is, like, someone, like, commented on Twitter. This is hysterical. Someone commented on Twitter, like, what kind of taco place takes an hour for tacos? Like, this is, like, so fake. Meanwhile, like, we did another interview, and this guy was like, I got to tell you, I went to Worldwide Tacos, and... It took an hour, like, and this was before the episode came out.
Yeah.
And he was like, I wish somebody would have told us to, like, order ahead of time. And I was like, just keep watching the show. Like, I wish we can talk to him and be like, you see, we got it.
But, like, I was like, oh, I'm going to go there now, but I have to
order,
call ahead.
Call ahead.
I didn't even know that place, but now if I ever want to go.
But, yeah.
But, yeah, no, so obviously the show is doing great. It got renewed for another season.
Yeah.
Hey.
And then you also have Night School coming up.
September 28th.
Yes, with Kevin Hart and Tiffany Haddish.
Just all the funny
powerhouses. And then you're doing First Gen still, right?
Doing First Gen. We, like, are still trucking along. It's just trying to, like, get all the pieces together. You know, development takes a long time.
Of course.
You know, still trying to do that. But we're still hopeful. I think this is, you know, when I released a trailer in 2015, it was just kind of like a Hail Mary. Like, please, someone see the show and think that there is a space for a Nigerian American show on television, because a lot of times when you see black people, you're like, we got Blackish, right? That covers all the bases, right? but it's just like, no, there's Caribbean Americans, there's African Americans, there's Nigerian, it's
Afro Latinos,
there's like, there's so many different groups. And so for me, I just didn't like anytime you heard Africa on TV, it was either like a caricature coming to America, love the movie, but caricature nonetheless.
Yeah.
Or like fleeing genocide, Hotel Rwanda. It's like, there's got to be like
a comedy,
middle zone. Cause like, we're funny. Have you been around Nigeria?
Have you
like,
seen us? We're so funny.
They're fun. We're calling people foolish goats for no reason. Look at these foolish goats. It's just like, why? Also, how did you know the goat was foolish?
They have the best insults.
The best insults ever. And so for me, you know, like I think the show was like an alley-oop then because now I guess in like a post-Wakanda America, you know, I think people are like, oh, yeah. It's like,
great. Yeah.
I like that. Post Wakanda.
We're in a post Wakanda era. And I think now people are like, Africa, right?
Yeah.
Maybe we should do a thing.
Yeah. No.
And so.
Like, are y'all from Wakanda?
I just met with the film exec and he was like, I told him I'm in Nigeria. He's like, y'all are everywhere. And I was like, yes.
He's like,
that's so good.
I want to do something about you guys. I want to do something. I was like, that's.
We are. Don't you worry. We're doing it. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. You can finance it when we do it, but we're doing it. And then that's why.
You can finance it.
Yeah. Thank you. No, we got it. We got y'all. All of y'all. But that's why I did Jesus and Jalove, the podcast with Lovie, because it is literally like two things we can't live without. You know, like our pride in like the things that we do at home, like which is eat Jalove rice, and like our pride in our faith, which is like where the Jesus part comes in, is what like drives us and motivates us to like continue staying in this business. I'm like, Lovie's was supposed to be, I think, an engineer, and like she makes a living writing now.
No,
and it's just
fantastic.
Like, and you're like, well, our parents are like, what? So a pen, you're going to use a pen to advance your life. And it's like, yes, I will. And so like just the opportunity to share those very real, very funny stories. Like we can laugh about it now because like the pain is over.
Yeah.
But like that's why the podcast exists. And like when I tell you there are people who are not Nigerian that listen to the podcast, there are like people who are married to Nigerians that aren't Nigerian and they're like, oh my God, you've helped me like really understand my wife or my husband a little bit better. God bless you.
Good.
Or, you know, and so it's just like kind of like people don't even know what they want or need till they receive it. And it's like, when did you exactly. know you needed a ride share? Exactly. Like, you were just so comfortable, like, suffering through getting a cab, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. or just like suffering your friends. They're like, can you pick me up at LAX right. at 4? Right. Like, oh my
God. Like, when ride shares first came out, that was weird, wasn't it?
Because you're just like, you're getting a car with a stranger, and now you're like,
they're like, this? Exactly.
You're like, you go to another country.
Go to the country, right?
And you're like, is this here?
Like, yeah, like I look at it, do they have Uber? Do they have Lyft? Like, how am I going to get around? But it's like, yeah, you don't know what you're right. You don't know what you want until you have it.
And so, and that's why I think representation matters yeah. because you don't know what story you're missing if you don't have the voices there mm-hmm. who are allowed to tell yeah. those stories or share those stories. And so that's why I'm like, you know what? If the only reason like I made it is so that like we get a slew of other creatives from different countries
awesome. Yeah.
to come aboard and be like, hey, I got the story to tell. Great. Mm-hmm. I'll produce it. Mm-hmm. Great. I'll finance it. Or great. You know, we'll power together and I'll EP it. Like, mm-hmm. because how else? Like, if the door doesn't get opened and there's someone at the table who can vouch for that person, how does that get yeah. done?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, everything that you're saying is why we're doing this
yeah,
podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is why we're doing it.
That's why we're
yeah.
doing it.
I mean, it's like, yeah. and people don't realize, like you said, like, there's so many stories within the Black community. Yeah. And it's not, and then, like, with like the Asian community, there's, people don't realize, there's Filipino, there's yeah. Chinese, there's Japanese, there's Korean, there's Laotian, there's Malaysian.
It's, yep.
There's, each person has a different kind of story, so.
Yeah.
Thank you for fighting the fight.
Yes. And even the stereotypes, like, it's funny because it's like Nigerian, when you think about like the super, like what is it? Like the super minorities are super smart. Like Asians are the ones who are like, they're the smart ones. I'm like, have you met a Nigerian?
Exactly.
Like,
no,
why don't
exactly.
we have that? Why don't we have that stereotype? Exactly. Like, why is it always the email scams? I was like, right? We are God. Super smart. Like, why don't we get paid?
And sometimes those stereotypes aren't true because I'm not that smart.
I mean, there are problems with stereotypes across the board.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's just like, why don't we get, there was an article that came out and it was like the most advancing or the like newest advancing immigrant group in America might surprise you. And I literally, before I clicked on that, I was like, if it doesn't say Nigerian, I'm going to burn this article. And literally I clicked on that. I was like, duh. You know, because it's just like, why would it surprise? Here's my thing. Why would it surprise you?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I read it and I was like, this makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just because people are not exposed to that kind of stuff. So, I mean, that's what, like I said, that's what we're here for. That's why you're doing what you're doing. It's just to expose the world to different facets of people because we're multi-layered. And
yeah.
there's so many of us and we're all so
and
different.
We're doing dope-ass things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And even if you're not doing dope stuff, that's cool too.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's
just
the choice
your life.
Of America.
Exactly.
America affords you the choice to, like, not do anything.
Exactly.
Yeah. Just do your thing and live your life and be happy and don't let anyone call the police on you.
What is wrong with you?
I'm like, who called the police on you? Like, he's projecting.
I know.
Okay, that's another podcast.
This is like therapy session now. Okay.
So we're just going to wrap it up. We like to wrap it up with like a full fun questions. We call it the facts.
The
We just came up with
like the facts of life?
Yeah, no, the facts spelled FAQ.
That's a good reference.
The facts of life.
Because that's going to
take a good
FAQ.
The facts.
That gets into my next, the first question is, if you could replace a family sitcom with a Nigerian family, what family would it be and why?
Or what sitcom would it be?
What sitcom, what sitcom family would it be and why?
With a Nigerian family.
With a Nigerian family.
Thank hard.
Wait. It would be two of them.
Okay, that's good.
Everybody Loves Raymond.
Oh, okay.
That would be a good one.
That is
and
a good
Fresh
one.
Prince.
Yeah.
I feel like, can you imagine, like, Will is the, like, Nigerian cousin that comes to visit, and he's just, like, out of place in Bel Air, and they're like, I don't understand why this boy is doing this nonsense. No, go to the pool house and just stay there. Like, it would be great.
That is good. I like that.
Idea.
I like both of those.
Again,
everybody.
Any producers, it's my idea. You can just finance it.
Right? Like, seriously, let's copyright that right
now. If we see, like, the Freshers of Bel Air, like, Nigerian edition. I'm like, what the heck?
Principles.
I know.
Hey, Will, call me. You and Jada, let's talk about it.
Yeah, go reference this podcast where I said it first. Anyway, so obviously the last episode of Insecure, we had a surprise.
You guys were so mad.
Okay,
so long.
Okay, here you go. So yeah, because spoiler alert, if you haven't watched it already, I don't know what your problem is. Lawrence popped up at the end.
He's back.
And the Lawrence hive went crazy.
crazy. They went so mad.
I think they went more crazy than at the end of season one when he was with Tasha.
Oh, no. I was like, definitely more crazy.
Yeah, they were. So, like, what's the craziest thing you've ever read or anyone has ever approached you from, like, from the Lawrence Hive? Has anyone approached you or has anyone tweeted? What's the craziest thing that someone has said?
I think Jay actually did the countdown of like the best five reactions on Twitter. Nothing. I think people were just like mad. People were just like, ugh, God. I mean, like, I don't understand. Like, do I even want to watch the show anymore? I'm like, you should.
I know, right?
That should make you want to watch the show more.
But it was just kind of like people get so
invested,
stuck. And here's what I said to that. It's like, even if he never came back, because I'm like, in our minds, we already knew he was coming back. But even if he never came back, it's like, isn't that also like life?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, how, like, Issa was famous for saying, like, how many of you keep talking to your exes?
Exactly.
Like, why? Like, when you break up, it's like, all right, bye, I hope I never see you again, bye. You know what I mean? Like, and also, it's like, it was also Issa's fault. Like, she cheated on him. It's just like, so what do you want him, like, to be in the in the picture for? But it was also kind of like, as creatives, it was them trying to do something different. You know, it's like, it's funny. I was just saying to somebody, like, Donald Glover does Atlanta, and there's some episodes, like, he's not even in it.
Exactly.
And it's like, technically, Atlanta's supposed to be, like, he's the main character. And for anybody other than FX or, like, any network or studio that has the ability to be like, let's try something different, they would be like, they'd make the creative so stuck and be like, no, the main character has to be in every frame. In fact, he has to be in 80% of the shots. Versus, whereas FX is like, so this is just going to be a Paperboy episode? Okay, well, let's try it. Let's see. And that freedom to be a creative. So it's like, thank you, HBO, for giving the writers the freedom to be creative, to be like, if we're having problems trying to figure out where he fits in Issa's world while she's trying to, like, leave We Got Y'all or, like, leave Daniel, it's like, why don't we just hold off and bring him in later? And the network being like, okay.
Yeah.
I think it's just good storytelling.
Like, but, I mean, storytelling. But it's like, but people, and it makes sense.
Yeah.
But people are just so force-fed. Yeah. Like, this is... Like,
people get invested, obviously, in the show and in the characters, which it makes sense. It's a good show. So it's a good sign that people do. But it's like, I guess Twitter and being on social just kind of empowers people to, like, feel like they this is the story that they want to hear.
But
so
it's also if this is the story you want to hear, then probably means, like, it's been heard before.
Exactly.
It's been done before. Exactly. You've seen it before.
And like you said, it's real life. And, like, when that happened, those final seconds, I audibly gasped.
Yeah.
I was like,
and that's what she wanted.
But also, it also happens in real life when you've moved on and you've had this just amazing kind of with this other guy. Your ex pops up.
You don't want that.
But like, and also the setup. Oh my God, that episode was so good. The setup to that when it was Amanda Seals and in that car. I was,
because it was just real emotions. Yeah, like, what happens when you and your friends are like going in a different verge? Like, do you still
hang out? I don't hang out with my friends with kids anymore. Hardly.
You're a horrible friend.
No, because they don't. They're like, that's another podcast.
Again, he's like, he gets arrested on the weekend.
He doesn't have him, and he lost his pin. Oh, no, it's okay.
I have no friends.
We'll figure this out. I have so many questions about what's happening in your life.
Off mic, we'll talk.
So the last question is, so obviously you've been killing it with the comedy stuff.
Oh,
like,
thank you.
So if you were given your own world tour right now, headline Yvonne Orji, who are three comics that you would take with you to be your co-acts or your opening act?
I would take Zainab Johnson, hands down, and Chinedu Unaka.
Oh, I've heard that name before.
Yeah, Zainab Johnson, if you don't know who she is, she's phenomenal.
Okay.
She's absolutely, like, every time I do a show and I'm like, I'm able to, like, have someone on the bill, I'm like, Zainab, you free? I think once the world, like, gets a hold of who she is, like, they're going to be like, what? Yeah, and Chinedu Unaka, another Nigerian, I actually take him on the road because he opened up for me at Caroline's. He opened up for me just in North Carolina. And I do that because before I got to L.A., I literally had no clue of anyone or anything here. I remember seeing him on Facebook, like, friends of a friend, and Unaka is a very Igbo last name. Yeah. And I was like, you're Igbo, you do stand up, help me. And he was just like, get to LA and I got you. And sure enough, I got to LA and he was like, all right, well, just come to the clubs with me and I'll introduce you to the people I know. And he didn't do anything extravagant. Mm-hmm. He just was like, I looked out.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's all you need is for someone to be like, oh, yeah, Yvonne, she's funny. Like, he saw me perform or I sent him some tapes. And he was just like, oh, he vouched for me. And so now it's like, hey, Chin, I'm doing five shows. You want in? And it's like, it's not a thing for me to return that favor to him because he helped me out at a time when I didn't need, he didn't need to. But he's also very funny. So I think Chinadu and Zainab.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, I kind of want,
I would also like some, if I can do like asterisks, Rami Youssef and Vladimir. Yeah.
This is your comment. This is your tour. Oh, you can do whatever.
You can't have like five opening acts. Is Ivana ever coming out? It's like, I have all these opening acts in like 2 minutes. Like, thank you guys so much for coming.
This is your world. I mean, like, this kind of bleeds into our final question. Our
facts.
Final fact.
I think you have to end it because that can also like be problematic.
We always ask this to all of our guests, and you kind of mentioned this already with the, your three acts. But like, is there an underrepresented voice in the industry, actor, writer, producer, storyteller, who you think isn't getting enough play that deserves to be in the spotlight? And you already mentioned like four.
How much time you guys got?
Some more.
Yeah,
in, like.
I mean, I think there are a lot of fresh voices. And I just read this book called Freshwater, also by a Nigerian author, Akweke, and it's so different. And I literally was like, do you want to make this movie? What do you want to do? What do you want to do with this? There's that. There's Yagiasi. I read Homegoing, and I was just like, oh, my gosh, brilliant, like, writers. There is a young lady named Ego. She's, like, improv. She's a writer and like improver and also actress. There's so many people.
Yeah.
The thing about it is like the same way Issa like really gave me a chance, because there's no reason why like HBO or any other producer should have taken a chance on me, because it's not like you look through my credits and like she guest starred and did this. It was just like, no, I was just doing comedy for a long time. Issa would see me performing. Then I went and auditioned five separate times before I actually booked Molly. But it was just like having someone be like, she's funny. And then also having had done the trailer for First Gen was what like the producers could be like, oh, okay, I see her. She can obviously act and she can, she directed this and oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So like that was kind of like my calling card. So, but the reality is, as flattered and I'm grateful for people to be like, you're really good. It's like, there are like 500 other me's that were also really good. And like, I'm better now after season three, but like, at season one, it was like there was something raw there, and like all the like Melina and Prentice and everyone pulled something from me to make me a better version of myself as a performer. But there's somebody out there that has raw talent that like, if only we could take a risk on some people, because who knows what's in them? You know, like, people get so excited by finding someone fresh, and then when they find someone fresh, they're like, we only want to use this person. It's like, or you can find some other fresh people.
Yeah.
And then it's like, create more roles, because now you see different people. Like, Tiffany Haddish has been doing stand-up for forever.
Forever.
In fact, we and her did, like a spoof or something, like, when I first got here, and it was like, she was funny then. And now to see people like, Tiffany Haddish, it's like, I wonder who passed on her a long time ago.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like kicking themselves in the foot now. But it took one person.
Everybody wants her now. Yeah.
And they can't have her.
Yeah.
Because she's busy.
She's busy.
She's booked, blessed, and busy.
But there are other people. That's the point. Like you said, there are other people out there that are just, they just need that one shot.
And sometimes you just take a chance on people. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And it's like, all you can do is try.
Exactly.
Because the same way now you're like, oh, we want Yvonne. It's just like, thank you. I really do appreciate it. But like, if Insecure never existed, you wouldn't even know my name.
Mm-hmm. Oh my
or maybe
God.
You would know my name in a different way. But like, you know what I mean? It took one person being like, and it took a network like HBO, that's premium cable, that's not hung up on like, I think HBO actually prides themselves on discovering new talent. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, remember like with The Wire, all those. Like,
oh, exactly. Now look at where they are. There's a little guy named Michael B. Jordan that was on there.
Just a little guy.
There's a guy named Idris Elba.
Just some random
name. Yeah.
You know, Omar coming. You know? But it's just like, if not for the opportunity for a network to like risk some things, it's like, I think that's what made Hollywood fun and fascinating before. The risk. Now everyone's playing it safe.
The discovery. You discover somebody at the mall or something, but now it's like you're
the mall discovery story.
Now it's like, do you have an agent?
Exactly.
Do you have a manager?
How many things have you done?
How many followers on Instagram do you have?
I heard that was another thing too. Your followers. It's a lot.
And it kind of kills the vibe and
the magic of Hollywood.
That's it.
Yeah. Well, Yvonne, you bought some really good stuff today. Yeah. Yeah, it was a great conversation, you know, and thank you so much.
Thank you for coming.
We would love to have you back. If you want to be the third co-host, you can.
Yeah, seriously. I would also just want to know what your friends think about you, kids, and also what you did to get arrested.
We're going to have a session.
We'll have it. We're, this is going to be an off mic. It might be a special episode.
It's a stuff.
Thank you again.
Thank you so much, Yvonne.
That was great.